You're listening to the Fantasy 411 Podcast. Now here are Mike Ciano and Corey Schwartz.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411. Mike Ciano, along with Corey Stats Schwartz. Before we get to him and all our news and notes and your tweets,
we will press record
and do some housekeeping. We had a great show last week.
We thought so.
I thought it was fantastic.
It was a really good show.
I had my feet up. I was relaxed. I was enjoying it. It was good conversation.
And the funny thing is, we covered a couple of players that like have really played well since then. And I'm like, we talked about that on the podcast.
I called that.
I said that.
Corey knows.
Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, all good. You know what happens.
It happens.
You know what happens.
Stuff.
Some housekeeping. Fantasy411.mlblogs.com. For all your pitch and ditches, your two-star pitchers, which come out on Friday. So make sure you head over there. Don't forget to follow Fred Zinke's work on MLB.com's fantasy page and all of our other platforms. He's at Fred Zinke MLB. Corey's at Schwartstops. The Goose is at Zach MLB. And the general account at Fantasy 411. A lot of stuff going on. We got a lot of stuff going on. We got some tweets to get to, as I mentioned, but we got a lot of news and notes. I'm just going to go in order on the piece of paper.
Just going to rattle
because
them through?
Because I'm good like that.
Okay.
Because you sent your notes, which were fantastic.
Let's just stop.
And as I was reading your notes, I looked up, and, you know, a lot of talk right now is the red-hot Minnesota Twins.
It's unbelievable.
Who would have thunk it? Well, you know, when you have a Hall of Famer managing your team, things come... Oh, wait, Phillies. Never mind. So I look up, and I'm like, you know...
Mahler's a Hall of Famer.
I said, yeah, I know, but Sandberg is too. That was a joke, dum-dum. So I'm like, you know, with what's going on with the Twins, somebody has to be putting together some very nice numbers. And as I was thinking that in my head, I look up and I see that they, you know, I knew they won again, but I see that Perkins got a save. I said, well, he's got 18 saves. I bet he's leading the majors. Went and confirmed it, and I was right. And I think it was interesting in that sense that, listen, Glenn Perkins, we know Glenn Perkins is a good closer. It's not about him. It was about, is he going to be the Tony Campbell rule that even even bad teams get a closer with 30 saves? Or was he just going to get completely buried because they were going to be so bad, which a lot of people thought, you know, now they're red hot. The impact of a surprise team on fantasy baseball came into my mind.
Yeah, I mean,
because it's more than one player.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, look, they're getting, you know, Brian Dozier is a superstar, mm-hmm. really. I mean, especially in OBP leagues as opposed to batting average right. leagues. You know, Torrey Hunter's off to a good start. Joe Mauer's driving the ball with a little bit more authority this year. You know, Trevor Plouffe is having a good season. They're starting to find some production from the bottom of the lineup. It's a decent offensive team. They're red hot right now. The pitching's holding up. I mean, I don't look at this and think this is a great team, but they're playing great right now.
Right.
And you got to give them credit. You know, Glenn Perkins, he's fully healthy again. But so as much as I think he's a quality closer, I mean, coming into last year, if you assumed he was healthy, he was probably in the second of the, you know, the top 10.
Which is fine.
Somewhere around sixth, seventh, whatever. I still might be looking to sell high a little bit, right?
That was my next question.
I think he's a good closer, no question. I'm not saying the guy's going to blow up, but everything is going right for him right now. First of all, Jason Gray rule. Has anything changed? Mm-hmm. Not really. He's healthy, you know, but his pitch repertoire, his velocity, all that stuff looks fairly well the same as in the past. Strikeouts are down a little bit. Career low ground ball rate, very lucky batting average on balls and playing strand rate, very lucky home run to fly ball rate. So he's basically doing the same thing he's ever done, but the results have been coming out a lot better, so you expect that to regress a little bit. That won't make him a bad closer, mm-hmm. but that means he's probably enjoying the best part of his season right now, and that's a time when you might look to be selling off, maybe for a closer who's gotten off to a slow start, mm-hmm. plus another player.
Yeah, well, and Melanson actually has turned his ship around, so he's not a guy, I don't think you can buy low on him. You know, he gives up a hit every time, but...
Yeah, I mean, you know, Melanson is the opposite side of the coin, mm-hmm. you know, and I had him in a couple of leagues.
Mm-hmm.
I took advantage of that good streak to trade out, to be honest mm-hmm. with you, because the velocity isn't all the way back.
That's true.
It's come back some, but not all the way there. It's 90-91, where it used to be 93-94. It's good, but it's not where it should be, and the strikeouts haven't come back. He was a strikeout and inning guy. He's like 5 strikeouts per 9 right now. So he's pitching well. He's getting the job done, but he's not all the way back.
Who would you trade? So if you were looking to sell high on Perkins for another closer plus another player, so let's say, are you saying you would package Perkins for X closer plus X player?
Well, if I didn't want to trade out of bullpen completely,
right.
and I wanted to use the closer downgrade,
okay.
Let's go out of order. I'm going to blow up your rundown right
well,
now.
I still have one more thing of Twins to bring up, though. So answer the question.
Okay, Sean Tolleson.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about him on the show last week, and I put a hard buy on him. Did I not?
You did.
Did confirmed, I not put confirmed. A hard buy on him?
Even though
five saves
it,
later,
it did not make the archives in Washington D.C.
Five saves later, he is entrenched as the Rangers' closer.
He sure is.
And here's why: 30-4 strikeout to walk rate.
Wow.
But a 2.82 ERA. He's actually had a very unlucky batting average on balls in play. That ERA is going to drop. I've been reading some stuff online talking about the change in his repertoire. I mean, looking at his pitch FX data in the last couple of days, I really don't see a change in the repertoire, but he's throwing that change up, the pitch, a lot more. Mm-hmm. So the repertoire is the same, but the pitch selection is very different. And, you know, he's got good velocity, a good hard slider. You know, some call it a cutter. I call it a slider. Some folks call it a Kaiser blade. I call it a sling blade. And that change up has really, really been effective. And look, Neftali Feliz is on the DL.
Yeah.
You know, they've got some young guys in the bullpen who are pitching well, but why not Tolleson? So, for example, would I trade Glenn Perkins for Sean Tolleson and help somewhere else? Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's what I'm asking.
Yes, I would.
Okay. And one thing, we would be unbelievably remiss if we talked about the Twins and did not bring up Ricky Nolasco. I mean, and I remember vividly, and I thought I texted you about this. I thought I texted you a Ricky Nolasco WTF. I don't think I did because we were too busy fighting over baseball cards. I did send it?
Like real men.
Did I send it?
Yeah, right in the middle of that thread.
Oh, right in the middle? Yeah, me and Corey got into a text message fight over the weekend.
I didn't even think we were fighting.
I didn't either.
I just thought you were being your usual salty self.
Oh, okay. And I wasn't. I was kidding.
I know, but salty kidding.
There was a lot of adult language in it, but you did think I was salty kidding.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, well, you insulted me, though.
Yeah, but I was being salty back at you.
Oh, okay. Anyway, whatever. I thought it was hilarious anyway.
I know. I was laughing the whole time.
Whether you really were insulting me or not, I thought it was still funny.
It was funny.
I don't mind being insulted.
Can I read it?
Well, you make sure you read out, the G version.
All right. So Mike was in. Set the stage and while I get
all right,
the text.
So here. I was in.
We're and way this is, off the rundown now.
This is what, we'll get back to Ricky Nolasco.
Yeah, whatever.
I went up to, my new thing is, it's 2 years running now, including this year, is Memorial Day weekend. They go up to Cooperstown for the Hall of Fame Classic, where They have a Legends game. It's AL versus NL. Each team is represented. There's about six Hall of Famers. They're the coaches. So it's Phil Negro versus Ozzie Smith, and you know Raleigh Fingers is the third base coach. Robin Yount's the first base. It's awesome. And they play a double day field, which if you've never been up there, is like really old looking, like you know Field of Dreams type field without the corn. There's houses out there. But anyway, you get my point. So anyway, I go up there for Memorial Day weekend, and this year Ron Say was up there. And that's Corey's favorite player. And I'm such a good friend that I know that. And so they're doing a media availability before they get on the trolley. They do a little parade down Main Street. It's really cool. So I take a picture of Ron Say and I send it to Corey. And instead of writing back thanks or, oh, that's so cool, he sends me a picture of his Ron Say baseball cards.
So that's setting the stage. I'm going to read the text. So this is from Saturday, 11:46 a.m. Mike texts me a picture of Say sitting at a table signing autographs, whatever he's doing.
Right.
And I reply back, all caps, the man.
Yes.
Tell him you work with his biggest fan since I was 8. And then I took out a picture of some baseball cards and mm-hmm. Took a picture of the baseball cards and texted to you.
And this is
and
where
said,
I turned
small sampling.
Mm-hmm.
As if to say, I'm a really big fan. Like, here you go. And now I'm going to be Mike. My Mattingly stuff dwarfs that stuff. Look at all those doubles. Weak. The Penguin would be embarrassed. And I reply back. And not for nothing, they were like Fleer and Opeachy. It was like different variations. It wasn't just 17 of the same card. I reply back, dude, like I said, small sampling. And then you reply back, doubles don't count. Quality, not quantity. The Penguin just told me that.
Which is totally untrue.
So then I respond, and I'm busting chops back at you.
Yeah, you are.
So this is me. You must be very insecure to try and diminish another person's fandom. And you go, kind of like you're doing now. And I say, I feel sad for you.
Yeah, well, that's where I got a little wrangled.
But I was teasing you.
I know.
So then you reply, you should. I look forward to my Mattingly cards coming to life and kicking the butt out of you and your Say collection. And I
so
go,
ridiculous.
And I go, you're going to make a very fine, sad old man one day. Actually, you're kind of there already.
Yeah.
And you go, I try to do what I'm good at. And I go, you're exceptional at being bitter and insecure. Props. And that was the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
3 hours later, you reply back, I don't know. I don't, hold on, let me see. I don't know. I don't know why you don't like me, but go to heck anyway. And I go, huh?
I was being insecure and bitter, and as you said.
I'm being insecure and bitter and old. And I said, ah, good job. And you went, hey, thanks.
Yeah.
And that was, yeah, that was funny.
That was good.
That was fun. That was fun. That and then we were talking to our boss yesterday.
There was a lot of other words in those texts.
Well, did you? I mixed it up.
Mm-hmm.
But stuff.
Yeah, stuff.
So we're in our boss's office yesterday on a totally unrelated topic.
Yeah.
We start telling the story again. And he and Matt Gould, our VP of PR, they're both looking at us like, what's wrong with you guys? Anyway.
Yeah.
And that was fun for us.
And then I was accused of being intoxicated at the time, and I was like, I was at a baseball game at 11:30 in the morning.
Well, you were at Cooperstown, so I just assumed you'd been to the Amagang Brewery.
I had, twice.
Okay, so I wasn't totally far off.
No, you're not, but I wasn't at that time.
Okay, in that moment.
No, in that moment.
Anyway.
So Ricky Nolasco. So the weekly league I'm in, you know, two-star pitchers have tremendous value, as they do, especially in head-to-head, obviously. And I'm sitting there, and, you know, and I kind of, you know, I was doing it anyway, but I made a mental, you know, a point mentally to take heed to what you had said on last week's show, which was fantastic, in that on Wednesday, take a look at, you know, look on Wednesday who's probably going to be a two-star pitcher the following week. Get a jump on the competition, basically.
Right.
So I did that. I looked in the app. You know, for the league I'm in or whatever, and I clicked on two-star pitchers, and they have it for the following week already. You know, it's tentative, but it is what it is. And there's Ricky Nolasco. And I'm looking at his game log, and I'm looking, and I'm looking, and I'm looking, and I'm like, man, I can't do this. I just cannot. And that, not even pick him up. It was waivers. I can't even put a bid on him, which I may not even get him. And I was like, I just can't do it.
Out of fear, right?
Out of fear.
Yeah.
Because if I have him, I may actually start him, and he could lose me the week.
Right.
You know, and lo and behold, he goes out and he's done it again.
But, you know, he's been okay. You know, Mike Pelfrey's been surprisingly good. But without, you know, but the problem is no one on this Twins pitching staff, at least the starting rotation, there are really no strikeout pitchers here.
No, none.
So even when they're going well, you have to be very scared about what might happen.
Yeah.
Because guys who rely on having the ball put into play and having the defense convert into outs, sometimes that doesn't happen.
Sure.
I mean, look at, you know, I have Colby Lewis in Tout Wars and, you know.
Wow. That was rough yesterday.
I was on the fence about whether or not to start him, but you have to field a lineup. So ultimately I was like, all right, I guess he's one of my top six starters, maybe my sixth starter. I put him out there. All right, first of all, he had nothing. I mean, I cannot believe Jeff Banister left him out there as long as he did.
It was very Jeremy Guthrie-like.
By the third or fourth batter of the inning, I'm like, he's nothing. I can't believe they're not taking him out. But there were also a couple of batted balls, you know, a couple of squibbers that got through, you know, at one point. Same thing with Porcello yesterday. I have both of those guys in Tout Wars, and that's how you lose 6 points in one day. Porcello at one point gave up, had a 9-pitch at bat against Torrey Hunter. Hunter hit a squibber off the fist that, like, just snuck past Mike Napoli at first base, 2-run single. Next batter comes up, Joe Mauer, 8-pitch at bat, battle. And Mauer hits a grounder through the left side for 2 more runs. And, like, effectively, that's your day.
Right.
But I don't know what I was talking about. I can't trust. You can't trust.
No, you just can't trust. I mean.
That's why, you know, that's why people like strikeouts. Not just because it's a category.
Right.
That's a good reason.
Yeah.
But because when you strike the other guy out, generally nothing bad can happen.
I mean, really, right. The only thing that can happen is a high pitch count and you come out earlier. Instead of going 7, you go 5 1/3, something like that.
Like Danny Salazar.
Yeah, which isn't great, but at the same, I mean, nothing's perfect in this world, but yeah, I mean, I just couldn't do it. And you know what? No regrets. Don't confuse the outcome with the decision type thing. And you think about it. You mentioned Pelfrey as well. 16-team mixed league where pitching scores more than hitting. Pelfrey and Nolasco on the wire.
There's a reason for it.
There's a reason for it.
Yep.
All right, so that was the Twins. By the way, A.J. Burnett leading the majors in ERA.
Sell, Mortimer, sell. Walk rate is down. He loves being back in Pittsburgh, but the ground. Yeah. Here's the interesting thing. Career low fastball velocity, super lucky home run to fly ball rate. Career low, I said walks are down. So anyway, long story short, sell.
Okay.
I got stumbled over my notes.
A couple guys who are absolutely out of their minds right now. And listen, and in fairness to Josh Donaldson, he's having a good year anyway. But this series, he was just, I mean, he just lit it up. He lit up the night and the day.
Yeah.
You know, and we talked about him a lot because I felt that some people were taking him late first round or very early second round. And I think you kind of, when I said that, you looked at me like, really? And, you know, he's more of a late second rounder, which Where did you have him?
I was a heavy buy on Donaldson.
Okay, so you were a heavy buy. Okay, I had you confused with somebody else.
I paid heavy for him in Tao Wars.
Right. I knew that. I just meant in scratch draft.
My office. It's funny. I've talked about this other league a couple of times, this mixed keeper league I'm in where I'm rebuilding already. I've really been working hard to find deals to acquire centerpiece players for next year.
Sure.
Finally, I get it. I paper a deal last week, last Sunday. I give up Freddie Freeman, Hunter Pence, and James Shields for Josh Donaldson.
Nice.
I know that sounds like a lot to give.
I know how the league works, though, right. so that makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah.
You give up whatever you can to get a top 50 player.
Right.
But the guy sent the deal at like 11:30 Sunday morning, and I didn't see it until like 12:45.
Mm-hmm. It's a bad
so
job.
I replied quickly, I'll accept. I sent him the offers through the app. I sent him two different offers, the one he offered me plus one with some throw-ins to balance out the positions. I said, I will accept either offer on your time. Guy doesn't see it. He's out at a barbecue because it's Sunday or whatever. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, it was Monday. You can make transactions up to the deadline on Monday.
Okay.
So it was Monday. He doesn't see it. Finally, I reply back. I'm like, look, I like the deal. It's fair. I offer it to you. Go ahead and accept. He emails me back and says, I'll tell you what. Why don't we wait and see just in case, you know, I'll accept the offer, but on the contingency that if somebody gets hurt and goes on the DL, we can undo it.
Okay.
I said, well, you know, that kind of puts the risk on me.
Right.
To make sure everybody stays healthy.
And then, you know, you can't do that.
Well, no, but my point is you make a deal in good faith. You agree to the deal today. You make the deal. And if the guy gets hurt tomorrow, that's not my problem. Everybody takes the risk, right?
Absolutely.
But if we agree to a deal and you get the right to walk away from the deal if a player gets injured, that puts all the risk on me.
Right.
You understand? But you know what? I'm rebuilding. I want Donaldson. So I finally said, you know what? I don't care if Donaldson goes on the deal. I mean, as long as it's not a broken leg.
Right.
Oh, my God. I can't believe I said that out loud. I said, I'll do the deal anyway. I'll leave both offers out there on the table. I'll accept either one if and when you're ready. That night, which was Tuesday, Donaldson goes 4-for-4 with a walk, 2 homers, 5 runs, the whole thing. Now I'm just waiting for the guy to reject the deal and say, you know what? I don't want to do it. Right. I don't want to do it. I'm just waiting for that to happen.
So it still hasn't gotten done?
Both offers are still on the table with the understanding that at the end of play on Sunday, he'll accept one or both offers, one or the other.
That is brutal.
Yeah, so now I'm like sitting here waiting to make sure that none of these four players get injured and go on the DL and that the guy doesn't get cold feet, which will,
I'd be more concerned about cold feet.
Right, and that's my point. Like, I have Donaldson and Tao, so he's blowing up. I'm like, yes. And I'm like, oh, but it's killing me on another deal.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, Donaldson, he is what he is. I don't think he's doing anything here that's surprising. The home run to fly ball rate is a little bit high. That'll come down. But here's the thing. When people talk about change of venue and don't think it matters, look at what Brett Lawrie is doing.
Yep.
Josh Donaldson, OPS, and Rogers Center is 425 points higher than it is on the road. Venue matters. And he's batting near the top of the order. He's being very aggressive, swinging a lot more, but the strikeouts are down as well. I think this is what it is. I think the home runs will drift down a little bit, and you know the batting average on balls in play will drift down a little bit. But I don't think there's anything unusual here that makes me think he can't continue to have a fringe MVP type season. This guy's a good hitter.
He's a very good hitter. He's a good player. All right, we have to talk about Prince Fielder. I mean, this is just unbelievable month. I can't see how anybody else can win Player of the Month unless I'm missing something very obvious.
Right.
For May.
I mean, it's going to be him and Bryce Harper almost.
Right. Right.
No.
That, I meant right for the American League.
Well, yeah, and that's why I said Bryce Harper.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying.
Clarified.
So in April, in fairness to Prince, in April he did hit .333, but he had one home run.
Right. So you're like, okay.
10 RBIs.
Slappy.
May. This is unbelievable. .396 average, 9 homers, 17 runs, 28 RBIs.
28 RBIs.
His OPS is 1.161.
Which is like the worst season of Barry Bonds' career. just joking.
His slugging, 717. I mean, his numbers are just
ridiculous. All right, so now the disclosure. I was a hard buy on Josh Donaldson this year. I was very skittish about Prince Fielder this year. I shied away from him in a lot of drafts, even where he was going for nice little prices.
Right.
Because I was worried about him recovering from that neck surgery.
Yep.
I didn't think he'd come back this well this quickly.
Yep.
If you look at the results, the batting average on balls in play is out of control. It's close to 400. That's going to come down. The batting average is
going
to come
down. Some of them are going over the wall, though.
Right, yeah, but sure. But he's not a 380 hitter. He can hit 300, no question. But he's not a 380 hitter. But let's get that out of the way. The thing is, though, the isolated power is actually right in line with what he did at the tail end of that great run with Milwaukee. Not the 46 or the 50 home run seasons, but the 36s and the 38s. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of season he's having, plus some luck on the batting average on balls in play. And again, that's a great ballpark for him. Mm-hmm. He's sitting in, you know, they still have to sort out the top of the order, but he and Beltre, you know, yep. you got the start of a core of a lineup there.
Yep.
You know, could he gradually drift down and end up, you know, lucking into 320 with 41 homers? Don't rule that out right now. So if you want to go out and trade for him, yeah, you're going to have to pay for it. But I'm becoming a believer in this because the power, if the neck is healthy, that power fits with what he's done before. And the ballpark and the lineup work in context, too.
And no offense to, and I brought this up, so I'm not taking credit for it. I mean, you know, maybe one guy.
No, take credit.
All right, fine, I'll take a little credit. But I remember, you know, bringing, I just, for some reason, I felt that between Teixeira, Votto, and Fielder, something was going to give in a good way.
Yeah.
Now, Fielder scared me just as much as he scared everybody else. Teixeira, too. I mean, he's very injury prone. I really wasn't that worried about Votto. So Votto was, of the three, let me put it into more context. That's why I really didn't want to spend the first round pick on a first baseman.
Mm-hmm. Unless it was Cole.
Meaning, well, we got into this where I felt like I had the opportunity to go Goldschmidt and McCutcheon, and we talked about it, and we kept going back and forth, and I went McCutcheon because I felt like I was going to be okay taking McCutcheon there and getting Votto later, which is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then April was a little tough because McCutcheon was struggling and Goldschmidt's been having a great year, but at least Votto was playing very well.
Right.
Now McCutcheon's playing great, and I feel a million times
and better. And Votto's cooled off a little bit.
Yeah, but that's okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, he'll come back around. But, you know, I kept staring at where could I get Fielder, Votto, or Teixeira, knowing I was going to take McCutcheon, and in some other leagues too, but, you know, not as deep as this. You know, because don't forget Abreu too. I mean, we had three first basemen in the first round.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and in the past when we talked about that, it was first base is deep. Don't worry about it. First base is deep. Don't worry about it. Now all of a sudden it was like, I love Abreu. I love Goldschmidt. Everybody loves Miggy. It was the tables were turned on how to draft first base.
And you had Encarnacion at the end.
And E5, yes.
And you had Anthony Rizzo, who probably was a second round pick on a lot of this.
Absolutely, year. Yeah. So all of a sudden the approach of drafting first baseman has kind of pulled a 180 in a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all because of injuries. Mainly, right? And age.
And, you know, honestly, and Fielder was the one I was the most scared about. Like I said, you know, that neck injury really had me worried. You know, not to be distasteful, but if you told me on draft day what Prince Fielder's number would look like on Memorial Day, you could have knocked me over with a foam cervical collar.
Okay.
You know, the cervical neck collar?
Yes, I understand what they
are, yes. Right. Yeah, I mean, very, very impressive. You know, Votto, big April, but he's cooled off in May, but I think he'll be fine. Teixeira's doing what you would have expected him to do.
Yeah.
You know, he's sort of the opposite of Fielder. Like, Fielder, I think the power can maintain, but I think the batting average will come down. Teixeira, I think the power will drift down a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not going to hit 45 homers, I don't think. But, you know, the 240 average, 250, that's kind of what he is these days. Yeah, I mean, those who waited and took the gamble on some of those veteran guys are definitely getting paid on it.
Yeah, and listen, it also depends who you took in the first round to pair with them.
Right.
You know, I mean,
I totally agree.
If you took
Cano
in the first round.
Yeah, but 3 or 4 years ago, my strategy was exactly what you're talking about, where I always looked at Adam LaRoche as the cliff.
Right.
You know, 270, 25 homers, 82 RBIs or whatever it was. Like, that's the last first baseman I'm willing to take before you just go into the deep end, right? So I would figure out where I thought I could get Adam LaRoche, and I would build outward from there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not always Adam LaRoche,
but
that sort of mentality. And like you said, all right, well, if I know I'm going to get my first baseman here or, you know, roughly around here, then I'll probably look in here for a third baseman. And therefore, that's why I always felt so much more confident early on about taking shortstops and second baseman early, building from the middle out.
Exactly.
But because of the decline in power over the last few years, I've kind of turned that around and taken more of a category-driven approach rather than positional, and that's why I've become a lot more aggressive about taking first baseman and outfielders early, because I want to make sure I get power, you know, and then I'll get my middle and my speed, whatever, later. So, you know, you have to ultimately strike that balance between categories and positions and risk and reward and stability. I mean, you know, there's no perfect formula, but that's the thought that I've put into it, at least.
Agreed. Okay.
Long way of getting through the third bullet point on our list.
We had a hard stop in like 8 minutes.
Yeah, no, it's not 8 minutes. We have a good 20 minutes. All right, let's get, speaking of first base, that's good news and notes. Matt Adams, unfortunate, 3 to 4 months, torn right quad. What do you do if you're an Adams owner, and what are the Cardinals doing?
Well, the good news is Adams was probably your corner guy unless you're in an NL only.
Very good point.
So you can go out and, you know, pick up the best available corner guy. You can look for a Justin Turner who might get a little bit more playing time as a result of that trade that we'll get into. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of speculation immediately around Ryan Howard getting traded to St. Louis.
Yes.
But he's got a couple years on that contract, and Adams will probably be back next year. You know, Ken Rosenthal rumored Adam Lind, Justin Morneau, guys like that.
Mark Trumbo's name came up.
Yeah, Mark Trumbo. So for the short term, the Cardinals will go with Mark Reynolds. You know, that's probably your short-term pickup.
Yep.
But, you know, a trade seems to make sense here.
It does.
Cardinals offense is really good, and it's not even clicking full on yet.
Yeah.
I mean,
that was a nice win last night.
Yeah.
That was some win.
Yeah.
Hayward, crazy. Homer, and then a bunch of little dinks and dunks, and then a throwing error.
Yep, absolutely. But, you know, Jason Hayward hasn't really even gotten going yet.
No.
That home run last night notwithstanding, mm-hmm. but that could give him a lot of depth. Now, big takeaway of this is that it effectively opens up third base for Alex Guerrero with the Dodgers. He'll play a lot more at third. You'll see a little bit more of Justin Turner. And then you have to wonder down the road, the Dodgers have Hector Oliveira, mm-hmm. the Cuban import that they signed, and Corey Seager, who got moved up to AAA.
Yep.
Got off to a slow start in AAA the last week. He's had a multi-homer game, some multi-hit games. He's really starting to string it together. Jimmy Rollins better start hitting.
I know.
I mean, this is a team that's built to win now.
They have to, yep.
And if they think that there are better chances with Seager at short and Guerrero at third, that's what you're going to see. But this team is loaded with infield depth right now.
Yeah.
Right. You're not taking away at-bats from Adrian Gonzalez at first base. Howie Kendrick's having a big year. Mm-hmm. Rollins is off to a slow start but still has some skills. You've got Guerrero and Turner now. Between them putting up excellent numbers at third base when they're playing. You've got Oliveira and Seager in the pipeline. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
What a bunch of talent.
You got to win. Donnie Baseball.
Next year, though, here's the funny thing. Their infield next year is going to be Oliveira, Seager, and Guerrero at second short at third.
Right. Kendrick and Rollins are free agents.
Right. That's going to
and
be that's
nuts. Sean Tolleson we covered. Brad Boxberger we did not. He got roughed up in consecutive outings versus those Mariners. Is Jake McGee getting back in there?
We talked about this a couple of weeks ago with the Duke, mm-hmm. that, you know, unlike the situation with, what was the one we were talking about? Oh, it was a closer coming back from an injury. Anyway.
Kenley Jansen?
Kenley Jansen, right, that he was going to become the closer, no question, as he is. We speculated this one could take a little bit of time, mm-hmm. because you generally see a lot more righty closers than lefties. Boxberger's been really good this year. I mean, just as dominant as ever, almost 14 strikeouts per nine. But his command has been a little bit shaky, and it might just be a case of bad timing. So it wouldn't shock me to see McGee get a save chance very soon. It also wouldn't shock me to see Boxberger continue to be the primary closer option, and this could just be two bad outings.
Right.
You know, but this is a luxury that the Rays have, whereas with the Dodgers, you knew Jansen was going to get that closer job back. With the Rays, they could afford to be a little bit more patient with McGee. He's pitched pretty well, although the Mariners got to him in the same game they got to Boxberger, I think, on was that Tuesday?
Mm.
So this is going to be an interesting one to watch. Both guys definitely you want to hold on to with fingers crossed and hope that they emerge from the fray.
The fray. Let's look at the A's together with Kazmir and Doolittle. Kazmir leaves his Wednesday start against Detroit. Left shoulder tightness. Otero comes in to relieve him as a long man and blows the game, the home run, the Cespedes, all that stuff. Doolittle comes in the sixth inning, pitches a one inning, only gives up only one hit, strikes out two, so a nice little return for him. But that game was so wonky, you can't really get a good feel for it.
Well, you know, to me, Doolittle is a lot more like Boxberger and McGee than like Jansen. You know, you assumed that when he comes back, he'll be the closer. But here's the thing. His average fastball last year, he touched 97 and averaged around 94. Yesterday, he sat between 88 and 90. He did not crack 90 once. So the results were excellent, but the stuff was not all the way back yet. So that, to me, is a little bit more, you know, leans towards the Boxberger-McGee type situation because they also have Tyler Clippard, who's been extremely effective.
Yeah.
It's not like the Dodgers thing where they're like, look, you know, Yimi Garcia, Chris Hatcher, we're just piecing it together.
Yeah.
Give him one outing to get his feet wet and then get him back in there. With the A's, it's like, let's give him a couple of low-leverage outings before we put him back in the closer role. But if Clippard keeps getting the job done and Doolittle is a little bit slow to get back up to game speed, they can afford to take their time there. So I think he will get the job back eventually and probably sooner rather than later. But it wouldn't shock me if it took a week or two of him working in, let's say, medium-leverage situations, you know, seventh inning of a two-run game,
mm-hmm.
not even setting up, not even closing yet. I think he'll be the closer, I have him in a couple of leagues. I'm activating him, but it wouldn't shock me if it was another 10 days to 2 weeks before we started seeing him getting regular save chances.
And second wild
card. Who said that's a lot of wood to chop?
Yeah. So, you know, who knows? Maybe Doolittle works his way up to become trade bait.
Yeah.
Possible. I don't know. You could trade a million guys. I'm just saying, you wonder.
Yeah, absolutely. But the key thing is they've got to ramp Doolittle up to where he's capable and trustworthy of working in those high leverage situations before they have that flexibility. I think it's going to take a little time there. I think he'll get the job back eventually, but it won't be right away like it was one outing and boom with Jansen. As far as Kazmir, soreness in that left shoulder, had an MRI yesterday as of our taping of this podcast, a grand extravaganza. I have not read the results. His next turn is on Monday. The A's are off on Monday. So there's a chance that they could just skip his turn and then come back in regular rotation if the MRI is clean and it was just some localized soreness. If there's a problem, they could go into the minors for Chris Bassett, who they got from the White Sox, Sean Nolan, who they got from the Blue Jays. They could stretch out Otero. So a lot of ways they can go. Drew Pomeranz is rehabbing. But we have to wait and see the results of the MRI, and that Monday off day gives them flexibility. So we're going to have to wait and see on this one.
All right, Johnny Cueto missed his start. We all know about this. Very bad news potentially, but the MRI did come back clean. He could return Sunday, which would be against those red-hot Washington Nationals. If he doesn't make that start Sunday, you start to have to get very concerned.
Yeah, it could be Michael Lorenzen coming from out of the bullpen, but I think you're right. You know, this is kind of like a Kazmir situation. These situations are similar where there's, you know, at least in Cueto's case, we know there was no structural damage. It was just some inflammation. He threw from 90 feet yesterday, Wednesday. They think he'll be able to start on Sunday. If he misses another turn, it could just be an abundance of caution, but clean MRI at least lets you exhale a little bit and hope it's only a start or two.
Yeah.
Look, when you draft starting pitching, for you to pencil your guy in as making 33 starts, I think is always a very dangerous game. If you pencil a guy in for 30, that's, 30, 210 innings, that's kind of the bar.
Right.
That still means he's missing two or three starts over the course of the year.
It's a DL stint.
Yeah, but it might not even be a DL. It could just be, I woke up a little sore, a little stiff.
Tired arm, whatever, right?
Exactly. So that could just be what's happening with Cueto. You know, I was thinking about this. I'm not a guy to draft aces, as you know.
I do know that.
But Johnny Cueto's really kind of an undervalued ace.
I believe.
When you look at it, what people pay for Kershaw and Felix and Strasburg and Scherzer, well justified. What's Johnny Cueto done to not be in that group? I mean, when he's been healthy, low twos ERA, huge strikeout numbers, goes deep into games, gets a ton of wins. I mean, if you had to decide on draft day, Cueto versus Kluber, you take Kluber because of what he did last year, but why wouldn't you take Cueto because of what he's done the last 3 years?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I hope it's only one start. I don't like to see guys hurt. I don't like drafting aces, but I don't want to see him hurt.
I'm not
that guy.
I know, I hear you. And one thing that'll be really interesting, let's just assume everything turns out okay, and he comes back, he's fine. It's going to be really interesting. I think the second the last out of the All-Star game is recorded, Johnny Cueto is on the block. I mean, technically, I think he's on the block right now, but the Reds, it would be a nightmare to trade this guy
before
the All-Star game. It would just be a nightmare. I'm really curious to see where this guy ends up because, he can go into a situation where he could just, we don't chase wins, but we're not afraid of him. He could rack them up.
I'll tell you what. It's July 18th.
Mm-hmm.
It's my daughter's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Haley, in advance.
Less than 2 months away. Thank you. Reds pick up the phone. Hey, Dodgers, we'll give you Cueto for Alex Guerrero. And Alex Guerrero becomes our everyday left fielder.
Right.
Who says no?
Yeah, great trade.
I mean, I don't want to start rumors.
Sure.
I mean, I'm
of course
just pie in the sky. But, the Reds need bats, and Marlon Byrd's not going to be there next year, I'm sure.
Yeah. He's never there next year.
With the injuries the Dodgers have had, having to dip down and use guys like, Scott Baker, not knowing how long Brett Anderson's going to last, they need a front-of-the-rotation guy. So the Red Sox, I'm sure, will be very interested in Johnny Cueto as well.
Speaking of aces who may never ace again, or at least not for the next 2 years, Tanaka gets roughed up on Wednesday night. Listen, I don't care about the stats. The velocity wasn't there.
Yeah.
And now the Yankees are once again concerned, as they should be, and he's either going to pitch Tuesday in Seattle, get Tommy John surgery, or have another rehab start in Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, whatever. I mean, this is completely up in the air. I mean, listen, You drafted him. I know you got him, what for $10 in
Tout? $10 in Tout Wars. I still think I'm going to get paid on that.
You knew what the risk was.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, there should be no surprises here. There can't be, oh, I can't believe this. Give me a break.
Right.
You knew what you're getting yourself into. You know, you know.
And I want him to come back for a two-start week next week. I want him to be activated because I'm running Colby Lewis and Rick Porcello out there. I mean, yeah. Masahiro Tanaka at 86 can't be worse than those guys. So do you want your glass half full or glass half empty? You know, the way I look at it, half empty means you're closer to your next beer, but that's just me. So the good news is he started it. Really? He came out throwing 92 or 93, which is where you like to see him. He said he was able to throw all his pitches.
Mm-hmm.
After the game, he said, I feel great. I was able to throw all my pitches. I feel fine. He was budgeted for 65, and he threw 62, but it's just the inning ended, so that's where they took him out.
Yeah.
So you can say there's some positives there. The negatives are his velocity was down to 86 by the third inning, which is a rapid decline, as mm-hmm. I might point out. And he gave up the three runs, including a home run to Jackie Bradley Jr., who hasn't exactly, you know, distinguished himself
right.
at the major league level. So my gut is... just a gut feeling. He has one more rehab start. They use the cover of we want to stretch out his pitch count a little bit mm-hmm. more to see if he can build up his velocity and arm strength. That's my gut feeling. Nothing would surprise me, though. It could just be that, you know what? This guy's got a certain number of bullets left. We would just want him firing him at the major league level right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Nothing would surprise me. If I had to guess, he makes another rehab start. If they activate him, don't get mad at me. But let's put it this way. He's one of those guys that, in my mind, when they activate him, I'm activating him.
Right.
I drafted him with the mindset that he's going to throw half a season. I want to get all those starts.
Yeah.
You know.
There would be chaos in Citi Field if the Mets, just in general, but especially after yesterday, if they sent Syndergaard back down to make room for Dylan G.
Yeah.
So obviously they are not, but I only buy this 6-man rotation for so long. Now, granted, there are benefits to it because, you know, you're taking it easy with Harvey. You're taking it easy with DeGrom. You're taking it easy with Syndergaard. You have all this talent, but, you know, one guy's coming off TJ and two guys are very young and haven't, you know, thrown major league innings of that ilk yet. But I just don't see a 6-man rotation lasting too long, mainly because I get the feeling that by the time these guys get used to it, they may hate it. Somebody's going to complain. Whether it's to the media, whether it's to Terry Collins, who knows, whether it's to Dan Worthen, and something's going to have to give. So now, listen, this may take care of itself once again with somebody getting hurt. You don't hope for that, but, you know, Dylan G's already been on the DL. So we'll see. I mean,
I think...
it doesn't really impact too much. You're going to lose a couple two-starts guys
right.
here
I mean,
and there, but...
you know, presumably, this is long-term good news for Harvey, Syndergaard, and DeGrom, like
right.
you said, because it's less wear and tear on their young arms. But... and again, I don't want to belabor this point. 50% of pitchers end up on the DL over the course of the season.
Shit.
Anyway. No one's solved how to keep pitchers healthy.
No.
So there's no evidence to support the notion that a 6-man rotation is going to keep these guys healthy. I mean, Matt Harvey's just coming off TJ surgery anyway.
Right.
Right? Like you said, I think problems have a way of solving themselves. And I think the way this problem will solve itself is that Dylan G's not very good. And I don't mean that as an insult.
Right.
But over the last 30-something starts, he's had a 5 ERA. I think they're going to probably go with the 6-man rotation for a turn or two.
Mm-hmm.
G will solve the problem for them.
Right.
They'll dump him into middle relief and go back to a 5-man rotation. That's yeah. just me spitballing.
Yeah.
He could pitch great, and
right.
then you have a nice problem to have. They're not going to put Nice in the bullpen.
Right.
They're not going to dump Bartolo Colon out of the bullpen, right. the most entertaining player in baseball. You know, Nice is a guy who's had some shoulder soreness over the years. He might have a phantom injury at some point. Dylan G might need to go to the bullpen. You know, I think this is a problem, as you said, that will solve itself. For the short term, you grin and bear it, because as long as Harvey and Syndergaard and DeGrom are taking a regular term, that's the key thing right there. If they, you know, if you budgeted Harvey for 220 innings this year, you were crazy to begin with.
Right.
No one expected Syndergaard to be up this early. And same thing with DeGrom. You know, didn't expect him to throw 220.
Right.
So I think everybody's going to get paid by the end of the year. So I would just say relax.
All right, really quick, and then I want to do lightning round on so these two news and notes, and then we got to zip through the tweets.
Okay.
Julio Teheran roughed up 4 1/3, 8 runs against the Dodgers on Tuesday night. ERA is now near 5 with a disgusting 1.56 whip. Are you concerned?
A little bit concerned. Strikeout numbers are there, right in line. Very, very unlucky batting average on balls in play. Very unlucky strand rate. Very unlucky home run to fly ball rate. Mm-hmm. So you can say he's due for some good luck. But the walks are way up. He hasn't had good command, and he's throwing a ton of sliders. I mean, a ton of sliders, and it has not been an effective pitch. I wonder if the fact that the Braves are sort of, you know, they're sort of vacillating between Bethancourt and Pierzynski as their catcher. He hasn't been able to get a good rhythm with either catcher yet. I don't know who he's thrown, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But I think he's throwing too many sliders. It hasn't been a good pitch for him, and he's throwing a ton of them compared to last year. One other thing I should point out, career low fly ball rate. Mm. He's getting a lot more grounders with the fastball and the changeup and stuff. So I think it's a combination of struggling with the repertoire, struggling with the command, struggling with some bad luck. I'm not a type to go out and trade four pitchers, but if I was, this would be an interesting buy low.
You'd label him a buy. Okay, yeah. And Yasmani Tomas, 10-game hitting streak, 8 multi-hit games.
Make 11, got a knock
11,
last night.
Sorry, apologies.
Yeah, honestly, you know, I saw him in spring training and I wasn't impressed. Right. You know, small sample sizes. And part of what left me unimpressed was he wasn't driving the ball. He was going the other way a lot. And so far, he has been. 45% of his balls, batted balls up the middle, 33% the other way. He's not pulling the ball. But he's putting into play, you know, I could say, well, of player, and here's a little bit of your StatCast data, Mike. Of players with 50 or more batted balls for which we have data, Tomas is 149th out of 242 in batted ball velocity. That is to say, below average. But he's ahead of Anthony Rizzo by a couple of spots.
Wow.
Yeah. So you kind of take it with
a
grain of salt. You know, 7 doubles, only 1 homer. I think I'm impressed by the fact that he's making enough adjustments to start making contact, even if he's driving the ball the other way, start to hit some more line drives. I think as he matures, he'll start to look to pull the ball a little bit more. I don't say he's a buy right now. I got to be honest with you. Based on what I saw in spring training, I'm surprised he's even been this good.
All right. Let's do the tweets that were sent in to @fantasy411. This is one answer and go. Which side of this trade do you prefer? This is from @bkest1207. Zobrist, Salazar, Syndergaard, or Reyes, Weaver? Need a shortstop. Have enough pitching.
I'm just so worried about Reyes, all the injuries he's had. Is he really going to run at this point after all the leg injuries? You know, Zobrist isn't a great player, but he's still useful. I don't think I would do this. I'd look a little higher.
Okay. @FantasyBaseballGuru, should I trade Alex Rios for Julio Teheran? 10-team mix head-to-head.
Well, it's fair value, but, you know, if this were a 12 or a 15-er, I'd be a lot more encouraged. But in a 10-team mixed league, I don't think you need to trade for starting pitching, period.
And who knows? Teheran may get cut in a 10-teamer.
Right, exactly. So Rios is a fifth outfielder in this format, but Tehran's an end-of-rotation guy. So, sure, if you want, but whatever.
I'd wait it out. @DBrent15, Encarnacion or Rizzo, rest of season?
This may surprise you. I say Rizzo.
Rizzo!
I'm a huge Encarnacion fan. Everybody knows that. I'm a little concerned that his strikeout rate is so high this year compared to where it's been in the last few years. I think the power will be there. It has been there. Rizzo, what I like is that he's running. And stolen bases are elective. Stolen bases are not only skill, they're strategic. Dexter Fowler's running a lot more. Mm-hmm. Chris Bryant is running a lot.
Joe Maddon, baby.
Rizzo is running a lot. You just hit the nail on the head.
Yep.
I think Encarnacion will put up the better power numbers, but I think Rizzo will give you the better all-around five-category value.
@ELLoyd16, trade Strasburg for Hamels in a head-to-head?
Challenge trade?
Challenge!
Sure, why not? But I think you're selling low on Strasburg, to be honest with you. I think, you know, like Tehran, it's a combination of bad mechanics and pitch selection and all that, but the stuff is still there, the strikeouts are there, some bad luck on the key indicators. I love Cole Hamels, don't get me wrong, but I think if Strasburg were clicking on all cylinders, you wouldn't trade him straight up for Hamels. So I might wait and see.
Okay. @DelaCueva97, Kenji Morales or Joey Votto rest of season?
Votto.
Oh, boy, we haven't talked about Morales a lot.
It's all RBIs.
He's having a great season.
I mean, the RBIs count. They're a category, but Votto's the better hitter.
Yep, I agree. Either way. I love them both. But Votto, yes. @DrakeMeckers, drop Paxton for Pfister when he comes off the DL.
Same church, different pew.
@Roto_baseball, would you trade Carlos Carrasco for Manny Machado? Machado would be a 13th round keeper for 3 years, and I'm in need of average and steals.
Well, yes, yeah. I would do that. Carrasco had
one of the day.
Carrasco had a very nice game on Wednesday. I think he's going to be fine going forward, but I like Machado. I don't think he's going to help you a lot in average, but he's running, and that impresses me because, again, manager's decision to run for the most part. They trust his knee is healthy enough to run.
True.
I think that's a great sign, so I would do that deal.
All right, that'll do it for another edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411. Thanks to Corey Stats-Schwartz, the Goose, the Fink, and everybody doing a great job on the other side of the glass. We'll see you next time on this edition, May 28th, 2015, Year of Our Lord, 1AB, MLB.com's Fantasy 411.